From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark, here again with Family Doc Zorba Pastor to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, the number to call is 800-462-7413. Along with your call, some topics to talk about Zorba, tell us.
And we're going to talk about grapes, other foodstuffs, choking hazards in children, toys you have to be careful of. Very important to talk about this type of year.
Yeah.
And sexually transmitted disease and the use of mouthwash, such as Listerine. Some new data that I think is really important because STDs are on the increase.
Interesting. And what's our recipe?
Spinach enchiladas. If you like spinach, I like spinach.
Yeah.
Popeye likes spinach. Mm-hmm. If you like enchiladas, I like enchiladas. Mm-hmm. I don't think Popeye ever tasted an enchilada. You'll like this recipe.
800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. Let's get to the phones now. A listener with us in Spokane, Washington. Hi.
Hi there.
How can we help?
Since I've been kind of small, I've had some issues with migraines and tiredness and, early puberty and stuff like that, which has kind of led to getting my tubes tied and having a hysterectomy, and, now that's led to a lot of weight gain and very classic signs of Hashimoto's disease, but very, nothing is helping at all.
What is Hashimoto's disease?
Oh, that's a form of thyroiditis,
It's a hypothyroidism.
Yeah. How old are you now?
I'm 33.
33, okay. So you've seen multiple doctors. You've seen an endocrinologist, I take it?
Okay. I'm under the care of an endocrinologist right now.
Okay,
actually.
So you're seeing an endocrinologist. You've got Hashimoto's thyroiditis, a thyroid problem which causes low thyroid. And how do they relate it to the fatigue and the early puberty and the migraine? You have these multiple problems. Have they put it into one sort of grouping?
So they have not. They haven't actually diagnosed me with Hashimoto's. I actually just kind of done that research on my own. When I was finally went in to see a endocrinologist, they had just put me on thyroid medication and tried to put me on some phentermine to try to lose the weight that I gained rapidly the past 3 months, and that wasn't helping. And so now they just have me on like estrogen because they've done all the blood tests for hormones and they still can't figure out what the problem is.
Okay, so I've got a couple of suggestions. First of all, they put you on thyroid replacement because they did a test, a TSH test, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So they put you on it. They said your thyroid is low. They did this because they measured the TSH. And then what we do is we give you enough thyroid medication to move that TSH into a normal range. So that's kind of number one. Takes a while before your body really adjusts to that. People can see a difference right away in some cases. But we're talking about 3 to 6 months. Quite a long time as your total body really adjusts to that. You've had a weight gain. You're going to a dietitian doing any exercise at all?
I have started, like I said, I've been on this about 4 months now, and I've started to try to go and really watching what I eat, and especially with, when he put me on the phentermine, I was really trying to
is a drug that curbs appetite, but it doesn't really, it only works minimally. It's not that good a drug. I want to talk about the weight for a second. Have you thought about going to something like Jenny Craig?
I haven't. I've thought about, the different weight programs. Tried a couple, and I get kind of frustrated with, not the results, so I don't.
Let me give you some suggestions. There was an article in the New England Journal of Medicine a few years ago looking at what we know scientifically about weight loss, which, by the way, ain't much. Not much at all.
Sure.
But they looked at what worked and what didn't work, and they found out a few things. First of all, yo-yo dieting, where you lose weight and you gain weight, lose weight and gain weight, and we doctors say it's bad for your body. There's no evidence it's actually bad for your body. It may be bad for your psyche because you're losing weight and gaining weight, but it's not. There's no evidence it's bad for your body. It's a medical myth. But another medical myth is that kickstarting a diet with something like controlled calories, and generally, Jenny Craig is the one that just comes to mind, but there are a whole bunch of different dietary things where they control the calories that you're on. In other words, you eat this, they're pre-made diets, they are expensive, they do cost money, do they work? And the answer was, there actually was a lot more success with that than going to a regular dietitian. Mm. And I remember reading that and looking at that and going, this goes against my religion. My religion, medical religion, says go see a dietitian. But it turns out that a controlled diet like that, kickstarting it, especially with a very ultra-low calorie diet, will do it. Now, within my medical group, which is down in Madison, we actually have overweight experts, and they use something like that. They don't use Jenny Craig. They use some other company that does it. And they often will kickstart a diet. And that's what I would suggest. I would suggest from a diet point of view, because often that's the first thing we want to attack, look at something of that nature if you can't afford it, because they charge money. Okay. You know, that's sure. That they are not cheap. So number one, it looks like it's going to take a while for the thyroid. Number two, I would look towards kickstarting with a very, very low-calorie diet. From a migraine point of view, what are you using for migraines?
At this point, I'm just on-site. I'm trying to use, like, the natural oils and just, like, Excedrin. They had me on preventative stuff, but I seem to get the side effects, like, sure, down the road. It works great for a while. But
and Excedrin migraine is great. I think it's a very good drug. It works. If that doesn't work, over-the-counter, Aleve, double the dose in the bottle, two tablets of Aleve every 6 to 8 hours. That also works very, very well. A baby aspirin every day for some people, or a full-strength aspirin, can help prevent migraines with minimal side effects. So I'd look at that. So we now talked about three things. We talked about thyroid. We talked about weight loss. We talked about migraines. Call us back in a couple of months. Let us know what happens.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Appreciate the call. Thank you. 800-462-7413 is our number. That's 800-462-7413. And now Zorba, a listener with us in Wausau, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
Well, I have a problem with my toenails, and it just started up. And it's a thickening behind the toenail. And it's not on every, you know, toe.
Mm-hmm.
And it's getting to the point where it pushes the toenail up mm-hmm. and back, where they almost look deformed.
Mm-hmm. You mean where they are deformed? It's pushing them up and back, they are deformed.
Yes. And, now, I don't wear sandals or anything.
Yeah, so you're no longer wearing open-toed wedgies and those bright shoes and high heels and trying to look good at the beach. How old are you?
Yes. I'm 68.
Well, 68, you can look good at the beach. You know,
sure.
Look good, play good, feel good.
The bad thing is I also have a real bad bunion on my right foot, so that deforms that foot.
Yeah, well, you know.
And my one-year-old grandson, he'll look at my feet and step back like he's afraid.
Grandma has monster feet. He'll step back on your feet. You see it, 1 year old. You've got to take a video of it and play it for him when he's like 15.
Oh, yeah.
Or something.
And, you know, they're honest, so that's why
they're
I'm calling
honest?
You.
Oh, yeah. As the day is long. I've got a 1.5-year-old grandchild, and there's no buffer there. What you see is what you get. And sometimes that's very refreshing.
Yes.
So, first of all, we'll talk about the bunion in a minute. Have you thought about getting the bunion taken care of, by the way?
Well, my sister had both of hers removed.
Yeah. And?
And she said she is not sorry at all because she couldn't believe how it threw off her walking.
That's exactly it. And let me tell you something. Bunion surgery is hell. I mean, it's hell. It's uncomfortable. Mm. It hurts. You know, the surgery itself you're asleep for, but the recovery, people say it's really painful. But if you take the right painkillers, you can keep it under control. And everyone after bunion surgery says, why did I wait? So you ought to take your sister's advice. You know, I mean, I just want to mention that off to the side. That has nothing to do with the nails. It sounds like the nails are something called onychomycosis, fancy word for meaning nail fungus. And they push the nails up. They deform the nails. They're thick. They're hard to cut. And there is a cure for it called Lamisil. Lamisil is now a generic. used to be a very expensive drug. It's not expensive now, not nearly as expensive. And you do it in cycles, but basically you do it for about 12 weeks. Cures about 80% of them. And for the 20% that are not cured, if you give it a second round, it'll cure about 80% of those. So in other words, there's a 9 out of 10 chance that you will get rid of this thing.
Oh.
It takes 6 months for the toenail to grow out. Toenails grow slowly.
Okay.
Now, I have heard the myth. They grow slowly because they're far from the body. And that is such a myth. I mean, the toenails are farther away from my heart, so they grow slower. Where did that come from? You know, I mean, we've got circulation to the toenails. Toenails just grow slower. Well, why they grow slower, I don't know. I don't think anyone really knows. But they grow slower. So it takes 6 months. So your nail is not going to look great right away, but you'll begin to see the nail improvement. In other words, you'll begin to see you've got new nail that is better.
Oh,
and you'll want to have that done before you have the bunion.
Okay. Okay.
So I would call your doc, speak to your doctor. Primary care doctors prescribe this all the time. Go in, get the medication. And I'd probably do what your sister recommended, but I've picked the time that you want to have your bunion surgery. You know, you want to have it during a time that's good for you. You don't want to have to worry about falling on the ice in the wintertime. On the other hand, you don't want it to interfere with those summer times when you're at the ocean and you've got your shoes off and the men are oogling at your at your pristine feet, and your grandchild says, "Grandma, you don't have monster feet anymore. I love you." See, so pick your time well.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. You're welcome.
We appreciate the call. Thank you so much. You have some info, Zorba, on the choking hazards for
kids. Yeah, well, we're talking about kids. Yeah. So I've got a 1.5-year-old, and so not a child, grandchild.
You haven't mentioned that at all.
Yeah, I've only mentioned it continuously. I'm going to see her.
It takes at least 20 seconds for Zorba to bring up his grandchild.
Bella. You know, she's the cutest grandchild in the world. But, of course, I've been thinking about choking and hazards because we give her little things to eat. That's what you do with grandchild. Well, this is an article in the British Medical Journal that looked at grapes. And I mention it because we think of certain choking hazards. So when you get a toy at a toy store, if it's a good toy store, they basically will tell you whether or not the toy can be used, of course, for children under a certain age. And they often will have a little gadget in the store, if you're looking at beads and other things, to make sure that it is that it's not going to clog the airway. You have to be very careful about beads and other things that children will suck in, clog the airway, and they suffocate and die. And when I was Penny and I lived in Nova Scotia, which we loved, and that's where I finished my training. And I remember a young child came in dead into the emergency room, and I looked down the back of the throat, and there it was, a little toy. The child had been left with the grandmother, and a little bead had clogged the airway. Well, foodstuffs account for over half of all the episodes of fatal choking. Half of all the episodes. Hot dogs being one of them. You know, if you cut up the hot dog, that's fine, but you can just imagine it goes in there. Sweets being another one. Hard candy, once again, a ball that goes in there. But grapes, and not a lot of people know
that
about
grapes. That surprises me. How can you choke on a grape?
Well, a grape is a large object. It gets lodged into the pipe, and when you try to get it out, you can put your finger down a kid's, you can put a finger down a kid and get it right into their windpipe. You can easily get to it. But with a grape, it slides around. It makes a perfect suction because it's round and it fits in there, and it's rounder than you would, you know, rounder makes a bigger fit than you would ever think about. And so, you know, if you're going to give grapes a common food, and for that matter, probably tomatoes, but they're not as hard as grapes. Grapes have much more tensile strength. Cut them in half and cut them in thirds. And make sure you do that.
Yeah.
And I think it's important because one of the things that often happens, not just with parents, but also with grandparents or other people watching little kids, is that sometimes with food, we're a little lackadaisical. We think about toys and beads, and we make sure that there are things in the electrical outlet so a child doesn't stick their finger in. But when it comes to grapes, it's like, oh. And a child will say, oh, I see a grape.
It makes sense. But you think of grape as a soft thing. And you think of choking as a hard,
heart thing. So yeah. I think this is just important to get out. And that was the one of the things in the BMJ article was the fact that grapes are not thought of as by parents as an important choking hazard. So we at Zorba Pastor on Your Health are getting out the word on grapes.
Good for if us. You're
good for you. They're good, but make sure you cut them up.
800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba, as does this listener now, Zorba, in Lockport, New York. Hi.
Hello. I'll try to give you the Reader's Digest version. I'm 65. I lead a very, I think, healthy lifestyle. I walk every day 45 to 60 minutes with our wonderful dog. I do yoga on Monday. I meditate. I'm pretty much a vegetarian. Sometimes I'll eat chicken. And here's what happened. My dad died in 2006. My mom had a short-term memory loss. We kept her in the house for 10 years, and I pretty much took care of most of the problems. She recently fell. She passed away. My blood pressure up to this point was 120 over 60. It's now 149 over 95, and sometimes it even gets up to 160. The medical doctor put me on hydrochlorothiazide or something like that. It's a 25 milligram, but I am so opposed to medication. I only take half.
Well, half may work. What's your pressure?
Now it's 127 over 90. But my question is, I don't want to take it. I feel like I'm doing everything to lead a healthy lifestyle, and I don't know whether it's just the tremendous pressure I was under. I also have mitral valve
prolapse,
and I might be looking at a replacement or a repair.
So a couple things. First of all, the mitral valve prolapse, if it doesn't cause any congestion in the heart or enlargement of the heart, that's a very common diagnosis. You've gone to a cardiologist and they said we may have to repair that valve?
Yes. I've had an echocardiogram and I have to have another one in March.
Okay. So you've got some significant abnormalities that are causing things, and that becomes an issue of where they look at it and then make some decisions. Let's put that off to the side. You can do everything right and still get stuff. That's the reality. I mean, you can do everything right and you get breast cancer and you go, why? I just got breast cancer. I don't know why. And you can do everything right. I have people who come in my office, men in their 40s, and they do everything right. They exercise, they eat right, and they had a heart attack. Why did they have a heart attack? Bad genes. That's what it is. Their genetic predisposition. Now, this could be coincidental with your mom's death. Certainly as a possibility. I think going on the medicine is a great idea. And then if you want to, you know, maybe 3-6 months down the line, go off the medicine, get an automatic blood pressure cuff and measure it yourself. I mean, the risk of going off the medicine is not that great. It's that blood pressure, you know, 149 over 95 over time is going to make a difference. Now, we have reduced stroke by 80% since 1975 because we treat high blood pressure. We are dynamite when it comes to the reduction of stroke. Heart attacks, we've reduced premature deaths under the age of 75 from heart attacks by 75% since 1980. 75%. We are dynamite when it comes to reduction of heart attacks. When it comes to cancer deaths, other than for leukemias and lymphomas, we're not very good. Maybe 10%, 20%. We're early detection, we're good, but in the actual cure rate, we're not as good. Now, prolongation, you know, we keep people alive longer, but we don't cure it nearly as well. And I just mention these things because when it comes to cardiovascular disease, which you may have, we're great. So my recommendation is, if you want to, after 3 to 6 months, go off the drug, but get a blood pressure cuff so you can measure it.
I have one now. Yeah, I do it every morning.
Yeah. I don't think I'd be that obsessive. I don't think I'd do it every morning. don't be that obsessive. Don't do it every morning. Once a week, once every 2 weeks, do not do it every morning. Don't get up and say my blood pressure is fine. You don't have to be that obsessive. Loosen up a little bit. That's okay to loosen up a little bit. But you may still need a blood pressure pill. So when you go off of it, if your pressure goes up, here's your mantra. I hate taking this pill. Then put it in your mouth and swallow it. In other words, just say the mantra, I hate doing it, put it in your mouth and swallow it. 12.5 milligrams, if it works, that's a very, very effective dose. And I want to make one little aside here. FDR, do you know how old he was when he died?
No.
64. Mm-hmm. He looked like he was 80, but he was 64. Yeah. His blood pressure was 240 over 130.
Oh, my
God. There was high blood pressure. Pills had not been invented yet. We didn't know what it meant. The only way that he could take care of his heart failure for high blood pressure was by laying down, which is what he did when he went to Yalta to meet with Stalin. He looked old because he did not have the advantage of not smoking, knowing to exercise. He ate wrong, and he had high blood pressure. He looked like he was 80. He was 64. If he had hydrochlorothiazide and statins, he probably would have lived another 10 or 15 years, and Eastern Europe wouldn't have looked the same. I mention that not because you're an FDR, you're not, you know, a person, but he would have taken the pills. These pills are a miracle.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. And don't be obsessive.
And thank you so much for calling us. Before we take a quick break, Zorba, let's check in again with your favorite backseat drivers, the Grammar Police. Now, the following email came to us from a listener named Pam from Exonia, Wisconsin. She writes, "Hello, Dr. Zorba. I always look forward to listening to your show, and I hang on your every word."
And speaking, I wish my wife Penny would hang on every word. I'll tell you that much.
And speaking of your words, I have to point out that while you're sharing a recipe, you tend to say spoonfuls when it should be spoonsful.
Uh-huh. Okay.
You should make the noun spoon plural, spoonsful. Not the full.
Spoonsful. Spoonsful.
Thank you. Thank you for being so darn medically smart.
That's very nice. Spoonsful. Spoonsful. I'll just have to try to, I'll try.
Well, we always have a listener who will correct you if you make a mistake.
Oh, believe me, that's it. You know, what happens is when I make a mistake, I can just imagine what goes on in the ear. They go, "Oh, no, again." That's what they say.
Did you catch Zorba eating his words? Let us know. Just post it to our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Our recipe is coming up, along with more of your calls, of course, and another interesting topic to talk over, all right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. The number is 800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. And Zorba, before our next call, spinach enchilada.
Enchilada, spinach. Do you like spinach?
I like spinach.
Do you like canned spinach?
Not much.
No, not much. How about frozen spinach?
Better.
Okay. How about fresh spinach?
Oh, yeah, of course.
See, it has such a different taste. Now, my mother didn't believe in fresh. She only believed in canned. So I never tasted fresh spinach probably until I was in college. And I like fresh spinach. I mean, I really
I do, too.
And when I get a sub, I always ask for spinach. I don't ask for lettuce. But I just want them to put on spinach.
I've never thought of spinach enchiladas.
Yeah, well, it's good for you to think like that. It's good for you to think. This might be a recipe
that's what
that
I like about working with you. You make me think. Let's do it.
Well, even though Tom is not going to make this recipe, you might do it. So start out with a 14-ounce can of diced tomatoes.
14-ounce can of diced tomatoes.
Now, I want to talk about canned tomatoes for just a minute.
Sure.
You know, fresh tomatoes are wonderful. And, you know, frozen tomatoes tomatoes, we don't buy. But tomatoes out of season do not have a lot of taste. So canned tomatoes are actually canned at the height of freshness. And if you put a tomato that's out of season next to a canned tomato and you dice them together, there's no comparison to the taste. Mm-hmm. So find canned tomatoes that you like, a brand that you like. I think they're all pretty good. But when you buy them, I would spend more money and buy a more expensive one. I would not buy a grade B canned mm-hmm. tomato because it's not going to taste as good. Very important.
Okay.
A small onion chopped.
A small onion chopped.
3 teaspoons of minced canned chipotle chilies divided.
3 little tea minced canned chipotle chilies divided.
Yeah. Now, do you know where to get that in the grocery store, Tom?
No.
Okay. So moving
I don't know where to find the grocery store.
Moving on. You find that in the Mexican section. That's
okay.
Where you find them.
Right.
They're little cans, and often you're not using the whole can, using part of it. 1/4 teaspoon of salt. I bet you could find salt in a grocery store.
Probably could. Little tea, salt.
Okay. 1.5 cups of low-fat reduced cottage cheese, the low-fat mm-hmm. cottage cheese.
1.5 cups of low-fat reduced sodium cottage cheese.
Okay. Now, a 10-ounce package of frozen chopped spinach, thawed and squeezed dry.
A 10-ounce package of frozen chopped spinach, thawed and squeezed dry.
Now, I want to tell you, when you do this, there are a couple of ways that you can squeeze it. You have to squeeze it and squeeze it and squeeze it. Sometimes if you just leave a couple of cans on top of it, top of the spinach, like with a colander, on a paper towel, the cans eventually will actually get the moisture out of the spinach. There's a lot of moisture in frozen spinach.
Okay.
1 cup of shredded Monterey Jack cheese divide it up. You're going to divide it up.
1 cup of shredded Monterey Jack cheese divided.
A bunch of scallions. Separate the whites and the green parts.
Bunch of scallions sliced. White and green parts separated.
1/2 teaspoon of garlic powder.
1/2 little tea garlic
and
powder.
And I recommend small things of garlic powder and then change it once a year because it actually goes bad.
Okay.
Well, it does go bad. It's just not as good.
Got it.
And 8 6-inch corn tortillas.
8 6-inch corn tortillas.
Let's make it.
Okay.
Preheat the oven to 450 degrees and then coat an 8-inch square baking dish with cooking spray. Then place the tomatoes, onion, 2 teaspoons of the chipotle chilies, and salt in a blender. Pureed it until smooth. Then mash the cottage cheese in a medium bowl. Stir in the frozen spinach, 1/2 cup of the cheese, the scallions, the whites, the garlic powder, and the remaining 1 teaspoon of chipotle. Then spread 1/4 cup of tomato sauce in the prepared baking dish. Cover it with 4 torn tortillas. They're going to overlap a bit, folks. Then spread 1/2 cup of the sauce, all the spinach filling. Top with 1/4 cup of sauce. Layer the remaining 4 tortillas and the remaining 1 cup of sauce on top of that. Sprinkle the remaining 1/2 cup of cheese on top of that. So what you're basically doing is making something that's like a lasagna out of corn tortillas, sauce, and cheese. It's very similar. You're sort of making a Mexican lasagna, if you will. Then bake the casserole till the cheese is melted and the filling is hot. That takes about 25 minutes. And take the remaining 2 tablespoons of reserved scallions and put them on top. And what you've got is a wonderful Mexican lasagna that we call spinach enchiladas. You will like it.
Mm-hmm.
Did you keep track of everything I said?
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you repeat it?
No.
And I don't think many of our listeners could repeat it either.
So guess how can they find it?
Guess where they can find it. Well, they can find it by using a newfangled instrument called a personal computer. You know, an IBM PC or an Apple IIe, and they could find it. Although those things never even connected to the internet. But they can find it on Zorba Pastor, on your health. And that's where you can find it. You can find that recipe and a bunch of other recipes.
I got to say, this sounds like a lot of work to do an enchilada.
Well, for you, anything other than opening up the can is a lot of work. So, yes, it takes a bit of time. It probably takes about 20 or 25 minutes. But there's some people, moi included, who actually have fun in the kitchen
and
like
cook.
Doing it.
Yeah.
In fact, my wife, Penny, yesterday said to me, I'm cooking things, and she said, you really like to cook. And I looked at her, I said, you just figured that out after 42 years of marriage?
You just discovered that.
It was very funny. It was very funny. And she started laughing. That really wasn't meant. She was just sort of commenting at the moment. It was like, aha, you really like to cook.
800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. 800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, to the phones with a listener in Sauk City, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Well, thank you for taking my call. My concern is this. In the evening, I enjoy lying on my sofa on my back with my head propped up on a pillow, and I have my laptop. It's on my stomach.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, am I harming my body in any way with the laptop lying on my stomach with the battery or any of the other contents inside? Because sometimes, it may be several hours and I'm enjoying my laptop.
Uh-huh.
That's my question.
Uh-huh. So this is similar, by the way, to what my mother said. If you sit too close to the TV, you'll get radiation and die of cancer. Or if you watch too much TV, your eyes will go bad and you'll go blind, which is similar to lots of myths that occur with that. With anything that has to do with electricity and batteries, we kind of worry about that. Like, are you doing yourself harm? Reasonable question, by the way, of whether or not we can get too close to computers. And that's a question that OSHA has answered for years, because it's not just necessarily the TV, or rather the computer on your tummy, but it's also looking at a screen, because what you're looking at is you're looking at a screen, and whether or not it actually causes harm. The short answer is no. You can sit there, have your laptop on your stomach all you want to, and you are not causing yourself any problems at all, with your batteries. But the other answer is, if you're doing it for hours at the time and you're not getting it up, it might be bad for your back, and maybe you should move a little bit. How long do you lay down and watch it without moving?
Well, sometimes it might be just for a short little while, and just kind of catch up, maybe on Facebook But sometimes, oh my gosh, late into the night, it might be several hours. Uh-huh.
So, one of the things are, we're laying down and we're in a recumbent position, and that really is okay because we sleep during the night. But one of the things you may want to consider is whether or not after a half an hour or an hour you want to get up, kind of move around. I always think that's good. And it is good for the circulation. Sitting is the new smoking. I mean, that's sort of the mantra that we're using now. That has more to do with what I think we do during the daytime than what we do at the end of the day when we're not working. So the answer is, you are doing yourself no harm, and this is a common question. This is also a question that has to do with brain cancer and cell phones. That's been a topic that has been on there all along. There's no hard data that holding a cell phone next to you actually causes brain cancer, but the question periodically seems to come up. And I think it's just fear of technology close to our body. That's what I think.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Do you live alone?
No, I don't.
Well, talk to your partner sometimes. Don't just look at that silly computer for hours after hours after hours.
Oh, I'm afraid he's on his.
Oh, he's on his.
Oh, but we suck.
Okay, then both of you enjoy.
Thanks for your call.
Appreciate the call at 800-462-7413. 800-462-7413. And before the break, Zorba, let's tackle a listener question. This one comes to us via the Zorba Pastor Facebook page, and it's from a listener named Ravana, who writes, "Hi, Zorba. The temps here are 20 degrees or so with single digit to below zero wind chills, and I'm having hot flashes while out walking in said temperatures. When I'm bundled up for the cold and have a flash, I get so overheated, I feel like I'm going to burst into flames. Am I producing enough internal heat that it's safe for me to remove my hat and scarf and unzip my coat during the flashes? Or am I risking frostbite and hypothermia?
Well, first of all, you can definitely loosen your clothing up when you have a hot flash. There's no doubt about it. But although you're having a hot flash and you're in the middle of -5 or -10 weather, be careful of those extremities like the end of the nose and the ears and other areas, because you can still end up with frost nip if you're not careful. But I shouldn't be laughing. I do apologize.
Well, that's all right.
For laughing at that.
But of course, our listener won't take offense.
I don't think so, because the way she explained it, she wrote it in a humorous fashion.
Exactly.
So I took it the way that she explained it, and I hope that I'm giving her the respect that it deserves.
Question for Zorba? Feel free to tweet us, post it to our Facebook page, or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We'll be back in a flash after a short break with more of your calls, another interesting topic, and our medical Mythbuster segment, all coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 800-462-7413 is our number. But Zorba, before our next call, hard for me to believe, but mouthwash can kill gonorrhea.
Well, we're looking specifically at some issues with gonorrhea mouthwash. So let's talk about it. First of all, we have to talk about the fact that STDs are on the rise, mostly on the rise in gay and bisexual men who are not using condoms, as AIDS and HIV men, often, and women, don't die as much, then the condom use decreased. And as a result, STDs, syphilis, and gonorrhea has increased more than we ever thought before. And especially drug-resistant, the difficult-to-cure gonorrhea is on the rise. Now, one of the issues has to do with transmission through oral means, fellatio, and fellatio causing the transmission of sexually transmitted disease. So they look specifically. This was a study that came out of Australia. They looked at men who had actually gone to a STD clinic, had gonorrhea in their mouth. So their mouth was infected and colonized by gonococcus, essentially the bug. The antibiotic had not cured the bug. They looked at laboratory tests and found out that lo and behold, Listerine, which is about 20% alcohol, seemed to decrease the gonococcus, the actual bacteria, in a laboratory test.
So did I overstate when I said mouthwash can cure?
Well, no, you didn't overstate it at all. So they took 200 men who are positive for gonorrhea in the throat, in their mouth. They were returning for treatment. So in other words, they had had treatment. They were still positive. They still had gonorrhea in their mouth. And half the men ended up getting saline gargles, okay, just saltwater gargles. The other half of the men used Listerine. And it turned out that the ones who used Listerine had a significant drop in the gonococcus in the back of their mouth. Rinsing and gargling for 1 minute reduced it by 84% of those who used Listerine. Now, it used a small amount were reduced by using saline, but 84% were using Listerine. And among those using Listerine 5 minutes later, 80% no longer had gonococcus in their mouth. So the answer answer was that Listerine may actually, the alcohol or whatever else is in Listerine, may actually reduce the prevalence of gonococcus, gonorrhea bacteria in the back of the mouth. Now, they didn't look for other bacteria that may be there, such as chlamydia, but I think it looks at some over-the-counter remedies that actually may reduce the STDs that are present in our society. And we don't talk about STDs as much as we should, but they're a problem, especially among young people. So Listerine may help.
800-462-7413 is our number. That's 800-462-7413. Back to the phones now, Zorba, a listener with us in Shawnee, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi. I had a question the other day about depression. I had depression, didn't even know it as a child, but I got over it, and I found ways to jump that hurdle. And is there anything besides something over-the-counter?
Has this happened? How young were you when you were first depressed?
I think the first time I ever had the feeling of something going wry in my life, I was about 7 or 8.
Okay, and that's pretty common, by the way. How have you treated it over the years?
Okay, when I didn't recognize it in that there, I would back away from my situation and say, I'm not going to do this, this, and this.
Okay.
And I would go on with my life.
Okay.
But as it got older, you know, and I got into my party years and that there, not saying a rough party, but back in the 60s, it was an interesting time era. And I would deal with each situation separate, no matter what it was.
How are you doing now? Tell me what's going on up to the present.
I have got to the point in my life, I'm 66, and I recognize it 3 to 4 days before it actually comes over.
How long does it last for?
Depending upon when it dawns on me, okay, what do I need to change in my life right now? Do I need to not be so gossipy at work? You know, and kind of stay to the focus on what I'm doing and then go on. Sometimes I have to divide it that way.
So you're able to handle this in a non-drug manner.
Yes, and I'm scared to death of the drugs. I have tried them before, and they have caused stress, which released depression.
Well, you know, the antidepressants work for many, but not for all. And so looking at a non-biochemical way of actually treating depression, which it sounds like you are doing effectively, is really an excellent way and helps a lot of people. And so staying away from things that can make depression worse, such as alcohol. A lot of people who are depressed drink alcohol. I mean, that's one of the reasons they drink it.
Yes, you know? I found that out. And that was something else I say. So as I was growing up, okay, I am not going to drink alcohol when things go wrong.
Right.
Those were the rules for me.
Right, right. It sounds like you're doing a good job with this. I would stay away from over the counter treatments for depression. I would stay away from supplements for depression. I think that it's a very mixed bag with that. I would continue doing this with a non pharmacological way. One of the things I would highly recommend in the wintertime, if you're more depressed in the wintertime, is to get an SAD light, seasonal affective disorder light. You can get them. I see them now in stores all over the place. You can get them at Amazon. They're made by LED Technologies, and they're about $50 to $60. They can be very useful, especially in the morning when you get up. If it's a day that you're depressed, I think I would try that out. It's a non-pharmacological way. I use it in the winter. I don't get depressed, but I lose my energy, and so I put on my SAD light, and I'll sit in front of I'll look at the computer, the lights on the side, and I'll do it for 20 to 40 minutes, and it gives me more energy.
That, I've always thought that light would work. I'm at a stage in my life, the reason I asked the question is I am starting my last 60 years, and I have a very positive thing that I know depression is going to come in, and I'm trying to take.
You take it, and when it comes, you deal with it the way you're doing.
Okay.
You keep doing it. Keep up the good work. Good work. You're a model for others. Thank you. Thanks for sharing that.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
We appreciate the call at 800-462-7413. Okay, Zorba, time again now for our Medical Mythbuster segment. Today's question is from a listener named Odessa, who listens to our show on WNYE in Brooklyn, New York. She writes, "Hi, Zorba. My partner and I love your show, but can you please clear something up for us? Around this time, we always seem to consume plenty of turkey, as it ends up on the table of many parties and get-togethers. And every year, at least one person mentions the sleep-inducing effect that turkey has on our bodies. I think this is a myth, but my partner disagrees. So let's talk turkey here, Zorba."
Let's talk
Who's
turkey.
Who's correct?
Well, you know, the myth is that turkey will do it, that it is this tryptophan that's in the turkey makes you sleepy. And I have to tell you, every time after Thanksgiving, I've eaten a lot of food and I feel so sleepy, I blame it on the turkey and I blame it on the tryptophan. But when I did the research, I found out that really isn't the case. It turns out that tryptophan is in a lot of things, including chicken and including beef. Mm. So, you know, if you look at a 4-ounce serving of turkey, it has basically about 350 milligrams of tryptophan. And if you buy tryptophan to go to sleep, you generally are getting about 500 to 1,000 milligrams. But if you look at 4-ounce serving of turkey, it's about the same as a 4-ounce serving of chicken mm-hmm. and a 4-ounce serving of a burger. So when you go and you eat a hamburger, do you say, "Oh my gosh, I'm so sleepy because of the tryptophan in the hamburger"? No. We eat a hamburger and we move on in life. So the answer is the tryptophan myth, although it continues, it's not the tryptophan. It's that we're eating 10 gazillion calories around Thanksgiving. And for many of us, there's a little libation mixed in with the calories. And then we're stressing our pancreas because we're having two or three pieces of dessert along with it. So no, it's that we ate too damn much and it's not the tryptophan.
I'm still going to blame the tryptophan. Have a myth you'd like Zorba to put to bed? Just post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Back to the phones now, Zorba, at 800-462-7413. As we welcome a listener in El Paso, Texas. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
Well, I live in the desert southwest, obviously, and we get a great deal of direct sun, very hot direct sun.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a strange reaction when the sun hits my head. I get first a tingling and a tightness, usually in the back of the head, sometimes the top of the head. Once that happens, I get a headache.
Well, these are migraine headaches. That's what you're getting. And they're just sun-induced. It's photophobia. It's induced by the sun. Then you don't like the light. And it's the brightness of the sun, and it's triggering off a migraine headache. That's what you're getting. They're migraines. And migraines can be triggered by a whole bunch of things. If you go to websites, you'll see anything can trigger them, from red wine to white wine to peanuts. Different things trigger migraines for different people. But in your case, yours are triggered by a bright sunlight, and that's why they're happening. What do you take for him when you get him?
I've gone on chelated magnesium because mm-hmm. a neurologist, because I am a headache sufferer, mm-hmm. even without the sun, you know, I was getting them very much, and he put me on chelated magnesium, and that has really made a difference.
What is chelated magnesium? I know what magnesium is. What do you pay for it? Where do you get it, and what is it?
Well, I get it at a vitamin, it's called Vitamin Shop, mm-hmm. and I get it here, and I really don't know why it's different than usual magnesium, mm-hmm. but I know it is kind of hard to find.
Well, how much does it cost?
I don't remember.
Okay, not a lot of money. You would remember if it was very expensive.
I would remember if it was exorbitant,
yeah,
yes.
That's what I mean, if it was exorbitant. Okay, so it gives you magnesium. Magnesium is a good thing to give. Does it work for you?
It has worked a great deal for all of the other mm-hmm. migraines that I was getting, which had become very extreme.
Sure.
But really the only time these headaches set in now is this sun issue.
You live in a place that's sunny.
Yes, sir, I do.
It's pretty bright out there in El Paso, certainly brighter than it is in Seattle, Washington.
Here's a solution.
You're right.
Move to Wisconsin.
Yes, move to Wisconsin. No.
Believe me,
to Seattle.
I would if I could. I would move in a moment's notice.
Move to Seattle. Have you been on a beta blocker before?
No, sir. I don't think so.
I'd recommend a beta blocker. Talk to your neurologist. Low-dose beta blocker, propranolol. Name brand used to be Inderol, propranolol, atenolol. Beta blockers work really well for migraines. They prevent a lot of migraines in people. Sometimes just a tiny dose of a beta blocker can make a big difference and just either take the edge off of the migraine so it doesn't bother you that much or stop it completely. If it happens on a regular basis, and as you said, you are in a sunny climate where it is really a bright sun, and I've been to El Paso, and the sun there is much, I have to tell you, it's much brighter than it is in Wisconsin, at least. It seems brighter to me, maybe because it's also so hot. I would definitely go to a beta blocker and see if that would work. And if not, I would try one of the other ones. Because, you know, you're not going to get rid of the sun. And like you say, as soon as it hits your head, it sets it off. So beta blocker, that's my recommendation.
Okay. Very good. Thank you so much.
And keep up the chelated magnesium. I know magnesium has been used in headaches for people for many, many years, but I'm not familiar with that form. But if it works, keep it up.
I will do that.
Thank you. Thanks for your call.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. 800-462-7413, our toll-free number. And before we head out, Zorba, let's take an email question from a listener named Hillary. She writes, "Dear Dr. Zorba, I recently read your article about the harm of fragrances. I rarely use scented cleaning supplies, but I recently purchased a scented wax warmer for some aromatherapy. I've been using lavender-scented wax cubes to help me relax and not to become a grumpy mummy."
Grumpy mummy.
"I don't know if it really works, but just seeing the warmer is a reminder for me to not take life so seriously. That said, I'm now afraid to use my scented wax warmer, especially with our small children around. Can you give me your thoughts on this? Should I stop using my wax warmer?"
Oh, I think it's just fine to use your wax warmer. The particular article that we talked about really had to do with household cleansers, and it had to do with people who are working in the industry with household cleansers and with a number of things that are sort of genetically modified for the household cleansers. Lavender, natural scent, no problem. I think it's okay, and okay for you and your kids. And it sounds great for me. Maybe I'll use it for my arthritis.
Have a question for Zorba? He usually knows the answer. Feel free to tweet us, post it to our Facebook page, or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We'll see you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org or, of course, through Facebook.
And you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping for your company on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0114Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.